There he is. Can't hear you. You're on mute.
Let's start that over. Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is AJ.
You're on mute. Yeah, I thought that was on mute. I thought that was going to be a good transition, all that stuff.
It was. I was so ready.
You screwed it up. Totally
screwed it up.
You screwed it. I can just say that. It's been a while since you've been here.
I know it has been. Yeah, I know it's been a couple of weeks. Yeah, it has. Yeah.
When we weren't around last week. Were we? No. We were around the week before. Me and Haley interviewed John Barber. You were supposed to be there, but obviously something happened. I don't know what happened. You never told me what happened.
Actually,
I think you did.
No, I did tell you, but
I think you did. So then we didn't do a show before that, but then the week before that we had Carmine, friend Carmine for the judge. That was a good show. Haley did.
I know. Yeah, it was awesome.
She was awesome. She's a great fill-in. She really is.
She really is. I was hoping she was going to join us for this show.
I was hoping so too, but unfortunately, she had another podcast to do today. Or tonight.
Oh, nice.
And apparently it's going to be a fairly long podcast. So she said it's going to be like 2 or 3 hours. So that's a long ass podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Jeremy's podcast. Every time I go on there, it's 2 or 3 hours with him. I'm like, I can't do another bracket with you, brother. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I watched this. I watched some of it the other night.
It's great.
No,
it's
last night. Was it last night? Times. Last night he has the music one, right? Where he does all the music. They go on for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so hardcore and he runs like 5 podcasts. It's crazy. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, he does a lot. He always has somebody.
Yeah.
He always has somebody to he always has a guest somewhere. I don't know how he gets them. How does he get them? Do you know?
I actually do not know, believe it or not. I just know that he has a lot of podcasts and he busts his rear. That's all I know.
he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
He is. I love him.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Very good. And I'll be honest, right from when he started on Parapost Network Central, he's been great.
Yeah.
Really, really good. You know, supporting Parapost Network Central he's been really good. He's been really good at doing that. Yeah. And I've always said thank you to him. And I saw you were on today, your show.
Yes.
What happened to Parapost?
I wanted to talk to you about this. Every time I try to do it with StreamYard, it just keeps saying error and won't let me post.
Can I tell you?
Can you tell me
how to do it? You have to keep on doing it. You got to do it like 4 or 5 times.
I was doing it for half an hour.
Yeah, so I don't know why, because it happened to me for this show.
Yeah.
For Parapost International.
Wow.
So when I uploaded it for Parapost Network Central, it happened right away. Sometimes it happens. I don't know why it happens. I've already spoken to StreamYard about it, and they don't really know what's going on because they looked into it. They say it's a Facebook issue. Facebook says it's a StreamYard issue. It's like, okay, somebody get their story straight because it's really starting to piss me off, to be honest. Yeah. So because people are going up that want to go up on the show that can't because they're getting that error, which is really funny because I know it's a StreamYard problem because the show actually goes up on the page.
Oh,
but it shows error in StreamYard.
Yeah.
So what I do is I go in as obviously an editor, not as my profile. I go in and I hide it and then hide that upload and then do it again. It will eventually hook up. It will.
Okay.
So you just got to keep on doing it. So it will hook up. Or what you can do is take it down, go into the studio and then edit it. And then it should go up that way.
Oh, okay. I could do it that way too. Yeah.
Yeah. So
awesome.
Right now we're not streaming on Parapost International, which I'm going to do is I'm going to share it over to that page. So, but we're on a lot of pages tonight.
Awesome. Well, hello everybody.
We have a, we have a great guest, but before we bring him up, I do want to talk a little bit about Global Ghost Hunt. Obviously, Global Ghost Hunt's coming up for October 17th to the 27th. We do have some teams that are interested. We know there are going to be teams coming back. We did sign on new brand ambassadors, and that's Ghoul Gang, along with Rootless Destination. Ghoul Gang is going to be covering the UK, so they will be doing that part of the world, trying to get teams to join the Global Ghost Hunt, because we need more teams from over there, to be honest. So if you are interested, I just found out earlier, the haunted location that signed up, they got a team. So Raymond, if you're listening, she did send in, Barb has sent an email. They do have a team and they need to speak to you. And I was going to email her back, but I'll let Raymond do it. She just needs to, the team just needs to go over to the site and register. So that's what she was asking. She was asking us to send her a form. There is no form. You got to go over to the site to register.
Yeah.
So anybody else who's got a haunted location or a team that wants to sign up for October's event, you know where to go. www.globalghosthunt.com. So that's where you need to go over and sign up. And we don't really send those forms anymore because the site is working. So yeah, you can just go over and sign up your team. But other than me, not a lot going on. Or other than you, with me,
no,
going on. Building some pages. You know the pages that I'm building. And those are going extremely well. I'm almost at 56,000 on Instagram.
That's awesome.
Which is great. And but I'm trying to I'm trying to figure out how I can intertwine it with Global Ghost Hunt. I don't know how I can do that. I really can't.
But you'll figure a way. You will figure
out. I will figure out a way. It's almost at, it's I think it's about 30 away. It's about 30 away from 56,000 followers on Instagram. So
that's awesome.
And I'm 1,100 away from 10,000 on Facebook.
Wow.
That's so awesome. It's doing extremely, extremely well. And I will let people know the website will be out soon. There is a website being built. So that will be coming out hopefully this week. And I will talk about it next week. So if it's up. And I want to thank one person who's building me the website, and that is my son. My son is building the website and it's looking fantastic right now. And so he's just got to do a few things for the back and then the website will be up and going. So I'm really looking forward to, like, I need another thing on my plate.
Right.
To be honest.
Like a hole in the head, baby.
Like, yeah. Do I have to be over 18 to view the website? Chris,
you need to be 18 to view anything.
With you, Chris, you need to be over 21.
Yeah,
you have to be over 21. So, no, but it's all ages. Website, anybody can go to the website.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to when that website. My son was pushing me to have a website, and I really wasn't sure if I wanted a website. He goes, Dad, listen, my God, you're almost at 60,000 followers on Instagram. Put up a website.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So he goes, I'll build it. That's fine. Now, one more thing. It was my son's birthday yesterday.
Well, happy birthday.
Yes. So I want to say happy birthday to Mason, who turned 24 yesterday. It's hard to friggin' believe that I have a 24-year-old, to be honest. It's like, he's 24 going on 38.
Hey.
And
Mason, trust me.
He's a very, very smart kid and is doing wonderful things and is going to do incredible things. He is. And he's a great kid. I love him to death. And he's my world. And
he's got a good role.
I don't know. What's that?
He has a great role model. That's why.
Yeah. His mother's a pretty nice woman.
So. No, I'm talking about you.
My ex-wife, we did well raising him. And even though we haven't been together for 20 years, he's a good kid. And that's what's important. And I want to wish Mason a happy birthday. And I know he had a good day yesterday and with his girlfriend and all that stuff. So, but we have a great guest today.
We do.
Do we need to find out what's going on with you?
No,
is there anything going on with you? What was that picture from last night? Looked like you were in a theater.
Oh, I was in it. Oh man, I went to go see the Mad Max movie. My buddy brought me to go see the new Furioso Mad Max movie. It was like, it was pretty
good. Who's that? Who's in that again? Sorry. Chris Hemsworth.
Hemsworth, and I can't remember who the girl's name is. Yeah, but it was pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't bad. Yeah, it was all right. It wasn't bad. I'm not a big movie.
I don't know if anybody in the room or you or even our guest today. I started watching the Tom Brady roast.
Oh, that was great, dude.
Holy crap.
Nikki Glaser crushed it.
Oh my god, she was amazing. It was funny. I didn't realize Drew Bledsoe was so funny.
I know.
But, I will say one thing. I'm not a huge football fan or a huge NFL fan, but he was funny and he was good. But one thing during his little segment there, he kept on doing this.
Yeah.
I know. It was like, what the hell is going on with that? Yeah. Why do you keep on sticking out his tongue? Was he drunk it was getting to a point where it started to get annoying.
Yeah.
Because that's all I was focused on.
Yeah. I recently watched it. I was laughing too. The best. But,
Randy Moss was funny.
Oh, Randy Moss was great too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't realize how, what's his name? His name slips my mind now. The host. What was the host's name? I can't remember his name. Kevin Hart. Thank you. Oh, my God. I didn't realize how vulgar he was.
Oh my god, he was hilarious. He was just ruthless.
Oh my god.
It was so funny though.
But something interesting, I stopped it when Kim Kardashian was coming up.
Oh yeah.
Now, I don't know if you know this or not. They actually cut out the beginning of her monologue or whatever she was doing.
Thank god.
I don't know if you know that. The reason they did that is because everybody was booing her.
Yeah, I wonder why. I mean, no offense, Kim, but I wonder why.
And I thought it was interesting that they have her there, especially with the rumors of her and Tom Brady apparently mixing it up and causing a lot of issues with, wasn't that some of the problems that was caused in their marriage?
I think so. I believe Giselle, Giselle loved, fell in love with that karate artist,
Now, see, that's the first time I heard of that. I'd never heard of that before.
Either, but they were roasting on all night about it.
Yeah, that was funny. And apparently, she's not very happy about it.
No, she was not, I heard. Either.
But you know what? Something that I found interesting, Jeff Bass was up. He actually went over to Tom, actually went over to him and told him, stop making jokes about Kraft.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I mean, I didn't.
Yeah, I saw that. And I was going, he goes, stop it with those jokes. And he did. I tell you, the man has a lot of respect for Mr. Kraft. And kudos to him. But anyways, we've taken up way, way too much time. So you want to introduce our guest for tonight?
I want to, but I'm afraid to because of, I don't want to mess his name up. I want to show him respect. And you already got it down. I got the Esteban down, but I don't, the first one.
Call him Mr. Esteban then.
Oh, okay. I'll do that then.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, we have an amazing guest tonight. He is a retired ATF agent here in the U.S. His name is Mr. Ignacio Esteban. Please bring him forward.
Please bring him forward.
I'm here.
Please bring him forward. Where did that come from?
And I'm here.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
How are you, my friend?
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Very nice. Mr. AJ Capasso and Mr. Brian John.
Yeah. You know what? When AJ was telling me that you were coming on, I was going, really? That's cool. That's really super cool. And, obviously I read your bio and stuff like that. And you told me a little bit about yourself before AJ came up, and which I thought was really cool. And so obviously there are people in the room that have no idea who you are. So why don't you tell people who you are?
Yeah, man.
What you do, what you did, and what you do now.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Man. But before I do that, let me comment also. I also saw, listen to you guys' segment there about Tom Brady's roast, man. That was hilarious. But Kronk, I thought Kronk killed it too.
Oh, I haven't seen that far yet.
So, man, you got to see Kronk when he gets up there, man. Yeah. He kills it. He ad-libs. He doesn't stick to the teleprompter. He goes crazy, and it is pretty good. You got to see it. I recommend it.
I have to be honest. Nikki was cool.
Nikki was good. She got standing O. Good for her.
When she said, Kronk says me no money. That was
me no money. Yeah,
I was dying about the crypto.
Me no, that not real money.
Yeah,
that was great. You know what? I'm gonna watch the rest of it later.
It took me a while. I have my kids. My daughters are younger than your son. And yeah, my daughters are teenagers. So it comes on or whatever. Oh, pause. It's time to do something else. I don't want to hear all that. You're right. Everybody's dropping the F bomb left and right. Kevin Hart every time. F Tom Brady. Right. Everything ends up F Tom Brady, and then Tom Brady at the end, he gets back at all of them. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, great. Yep. So, something to look forward to. And hey, listen, and obviously, he was having a lot of fun. And I don't know, that moment I said when Jeff Bass was talking about Kraft, he went up to him and whispered in his ear, and you can hear what he said. He said, "Don't say anything more about him."
A lot of respect. A lot of respect. Even Coach Belichick was funny. It's hard to believe.
Oh, that was great.
He comes up. And he does a great skit himself. And then I'm not going to ruin for you, but you got to see how the whole ends with shots. And Kevin Hart gets Kraft, Belichick, and Brady do a shot together, kumbaya moment.
Very nice. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. But, hey, listen, at the end of the day, Tom Brady, you know, where he was selected in the draft and what he did as a player is one of the greatest players to play the game. And I wouldn't say he's definitely up there in the top five. I wouldn't say he's number one, but he's definitely in the top five for sure. I would say he's probably around three.
You got the rings up there, man. He might be the GOAT there when you got seven rings, man. And, Montana, Bradshaw, those guys have four.
Yeah, and that's who I was thinking, right? When I think the greatest of all time, I think of – the first person I think of is Joe Montana.
Sure.
That's the very first person I think of. And then obviously Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
That's who I think of. And then I think of Tom Brady.
Right. But, Brady's got more rings, right?
Yeah, true.
And not only that, he leaves New England, leaves Belichick with a mess, and then goes wins a title in Tampa, which I spent a lot of time in Tampa also. And that was sweet to see that. Yeah. To see him with the Bucks and brings Kronk along for the ride. Wow.
Yeah.
That's special. That was special, guys. I can talk football all day, but I'll give you a little background about myself too. But I definitely recommend those at home. If you have Netflix, that was the funniest roast I've ever seen in my life. Kevin Hart killed it. These guys were awesome. And I'm just saying it because I mean it. I don't get anything out of it by plugging it. That's for sure.
There you go. Hey, listen, there's a lot of things that I would plug on here that,
if it's good, I always talk. If it's something good, I talk about it. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned ATF. I was 26 years retired law enforcement. I've been retired now almost 3 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I had started back in the mid-90s. So I was 21 with ATF and 5 with U.S. Customs in Miami. And you see the poster behind me a little bit. That's maybe a little tough there. That's the cover of my autobiography, ATF Undercover. And I almost called it the accidental agent because it was the mid-90s. I had graduated from college up in Tampa. And I studied political science and history, right? Not criminal justice. I'm more a poli-sci guy. I'm more into politics. I was studying at FIU, which is Miami, Florida International University, international relations, my master's. And I was going to go to law school. I accepted law school, go to Lansing, Michigan. But of course, I didn't have a scholarship, and it was going to cost me a lot of money. And then in the mid-90s, we're looking at $95,000, about $30,000 easy back then per year plus expense and all that. I said, you know what? There's something called the internet. Came out in 95. Windows 95 blew up, and I got it. I got on board early, and I got on the internet early. I got my email, and I started looking for jobs. USA Jobs was looking for a lot of people, and I said, people say, what the hell is the internet? What's this dial-up shit? I don't know if you guys remember dial-up, pain in the ass it was. People say, man, I can't use my phone anymore. What are you doing with a computer? And all of that, because it goes, that's all. You can't use your phone. You can't do anything. But I was looking for jobs there, and I found a job with U.S. Customs. And they're looking people. I grew up in my background. My great grandparents are Spanish. They came to Cuba. Unfortunately, with Castro and the Communist Revolution, they came to the United States, left Cuba, And I was born in Los Angeles, raised in Miami, very Cuban, very bilingual, a lot of Spanish. And I knew Spanish. I knew the Latin American culture. And about 85% of the flights from MIA, Miami International Airport, come from Latin America. So I knew the cultures, right? I spoke the language. Because if you're going to put in for customs, it like they don't want to have translators. They want people who can communicate directly with the, you know, possible people who are trafficking, right? The passengers, the mules, or anything else. So I put in for it, and I got the job. And so I started working. I go from possibly going to law school to the front line in the war on drugs right there in my early 20s. Wow. And all of a sudden, I after about a year or so, I entered the SET team, which is the contraband enforcement team, and we're making some of the biggest seizures in the country, right? Because at the time, the Medellin Cali cartel are pumping a lot of cocaine through Florida, and the corruption was enormous. It's eye-opening, shocking. And as an early 20-year-old, I say something, if you go in law enforcement, you got to have a good moral compass. You got to have that head. You know what's right and wrong, because I saw, unfortunately, a lot of people make wrong decisions, and it caused it. For me, my freedom was too important. I didn't want to lose my freedom. I didn't want to stain my name, and I definitely want to shame my family and that.
Of course.
But when I was there, I'll tell you a couple of stories there. The cocaine was coming in. Of course, I expected the ramp workers to be dirty. I expect the longshoremen to be dirty because they can buy, and probably because the cartels, especially in Colombia, were pumping in. They would take it on the airplanes. They would come in or in the ships. The fastest way is to load up, you know, flowers or whatever in a 747. You're there in about 4 or 5 hours. You come in, and these shipments disappear. I remember one they were part of. It was fish, these large groupers, right? Inside the groupers, they would have a kilo next to a block of ice. And these shipments were never going to go to where they're supposed to go. They get ripped off, right? And we would get easily see 600 pounds, 800 pounds of cocaine like that. And for these groups, that was nothing. That's just the price of doing business because they know how much they're getting in. They expect maybe to lose 10, 15%. That's just the price of doing business and the corruptions. One of my supervisors, which makes it harder. So it's tough enough, the numbers, because MIA has huge amounts of flights coming in. It's only a handful of us picking and choosing. That was tough enough. And forget about all the stuff that's going out because the drugs come in and the guns and the money go out and a lot of money because, of course, it's a business. They want their money, right? So that's even easier to get out than stuff that's coming in. One of the supervisors that I had, and it was kind of surprising because I knew the guy, talked to him and everything else. He would go on the weekend. He would be caught in a sting by internal affairs. He would go to it. There's MIA, and those who know Miami. And then there's a regional airport, smaller one called Tamiami Regional Airport. And those were smaller flights would come in there. And that's about maybe 5 miles from MIA. And he would come in clear in the weekends, but the flight would be full of drugs from Colombia, right? And he would be escorted with the local authorities from Hollandale and Hollywood Police Department. So they would come in there, clear the flight, get the drugs, load up in a van, and go to warehouses outside for distribution. But little they know, everything was wired up. So eventually these guys will go down. So that's within ranks. You're seeing that kind of stuff. And I remember seeing one of the other guys I worked with when he was escorted through the concourse in front of everybody. He had a belly chain on. He had handcuffs and leg irons. I said, man, I used to work with this guy. And look, now they got him. And that gets your attention. You're in your early 20s. You're saying, man, that's unbelievable. It's not worth it, man. Humiliation, embarrassment. All these guys. Was it worth the money? Was it worth that? Yeah.
No, it's interesting because I used to have a really, really super good friend here years ago. We lost touch quite a few years ago, but he worked for a particular agency here in Canada.
Okay.
And I won't say which one because I don't want to get in trouble just in case, you know. But he told me many, many stories when he was a particular officer with this agency. Okay. And he said some of the worst people were the people within the agency when it came to drugs. And he told me some interesting stories about some Christmas parties they used to have and the amount of drugs and unfortunately prostitutes and all kinds of things going on at this party. And it's crazy. So when you were talking about that, it just kind of reminded me on that. It's really quite interesting that sometimes the worst are people that are within the agency, not necessarily the drug smugglers, you know what I mean? So But yeah, so
interesting. I was interviewed because I do a lot of shows. You know, I've been doing now. I've been since I've been retired. You know, and you know, I'll jump in ahead a little bit. And I'll backtrack a little bit when, how I got into ATF. I've now that I'm retired, I've done almost 80 books on Amazon. Eighty books. And a reason why I started that was because of the pandemic and then retirement. And I got inspired. I do politics. I do true crime, law enforcement, exclusively on Amazon right there. And I meet, and from that, I started, people say, hey, man, I like your stuff. And they started really, and I really had no interest doing podcasts, I'll be honest with you. And I've been doing this over 2.5 years now. Yeah. And all of a sudden people start, you know, I'm on Facebook and I'm here, I'm posting, and they start reaching out. And all of a sudden I start having a big following. And then one after the other, after the other. And one of these interesting guys was Nick Giralsi, who is with, I don't know if you know Mike Dowd. He was the most infamous corrupt NYPD officer ever. He did that famous Netflix special, 75 Precinct.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So I know of him, but I never watched that special.
Did you watch it, AJ?
I only watched very little bit. I didn't get to watch all of it, but I know exactly.
Yeah, he's on a lot of shows. He's been all over, and you know, and it was interesting talking to him. That's for sure, because he interviewed me with his podcast show. And a guy who did like 14 years in, he did federal time. They got him on federal. So he's lucky not state time. State time in New York, I think, would have been devastating. I think he tried to do isolation, but that's just too much. And then you got to survive, you know, with these guys. But federal's a little bit easier. I think the state with these monsters out there, these gang members, they've been too. Oh, this guy was NY. Even though he was on the wrong side, I guess he started. And I guess his family also, his father was a firefighter. His brother was NYPD, but it wasn't corrupt. Right. And I said, what happened there, man? It's like, yeah. How did you go to the dark
side? I wonder if you know AJ's father.
No, I don't. Maybe.
Actually, you know, his name is Ralph. His name was Ralph Capasso. And he was very well known with the ATF and DEA and stuff like that. So my dad used to work with the cartel too. What happened was there used to be a field, and I believe somewhere in like Hamden, where we would go when I was like a little kid, and a helicopter would fly in. Two guys would jump out AK-47s. They throw a duffel bag on the ground. My dad would throw the duffel bag back. It would have kilos of cocaine in it. And then all of a sudden he would take off and do his thing. My dad was a big cocaine dealer when I was real little. We were very connected in like the family with like mafia ties because of my great grandfather. And unfortunately, my great grandfather got him into the, you know, I would say trafficking type business for them in a way, you know. And my dad took it upon himself and then ended up getting caught with 4 kilos in the car. But was supposed to get life, and because of the mafia lawyers, ended up getting away with 2 years. So, and he got out in one. So it was shocking. He was very lucky.
Was it federal time or state time he was looking at?
He was looking at federal time, but they ended up giving him state.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they ended up giving him state. It was shocking. He got very, very lucky.
Yeah, most people, I've dealt with my case, and I've arrested hundreds of people. And in the system, 95% cooperate. Yeah. 95%, because those who cooperate get less time, right? You get consideration by the judge for cooperating. If you don't, you get hammered. The federal system will hammer you, especially if you got conspiracy or racketeering case. Forget it. You know, you're looking at a lot of time. So, interesting.
What saved my dad was it was late 80s, early 90s. And I think that with the lawyer that he had, because it was from the mafia, I think they paid off the judge, to be honest, because it was so corrupt that it was ridiculous. Because there's no way nowadays that if you get caught with 4 kilos, you're getting 1 year. You know what I'm saying? There's no way.
You have to cooperate.
I mean, even then, though, they wouldn't give you just 1 year unless you gave someone like Pablo up. You know what I mean?
You give something good. You got to give something good.
Yeah, I hope I didn't put you on the spot, AJ, there.
No, not at all.
I know you like talking about your – well, not necessarily like talking. I know you talk about your father and his history, so.
Yeah.
What crime family was he working with?
What was that?
What crime family was he working with?
Gambino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how that ends up for Gotti? And the mess there with Gotti years was 85. Yeah, 85. Then it started Giuliani's famous trial there with the commission, right? That's probably the big Sammy the Bull. I see Sammy the Bull all over the podcast, man. Talks everyone.
Everyone. And you know what? Then he talks about Mike Francesi or Francesi or whatever his name is. And he talks about him being a rap, but then Sammy the Bull's out there talking all the crap, telling all the stories anyway. So it's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Who is the guy that is on all the podcasts and he's in hiding? And he was part of the mafia and he does a lot of podcasts, but nobody knows where he is. He's actually wanted.
Oh, wow.
And I forget who it is. I saw a documentary on him. I can't remember his name now. Maybe Chris might know. Maybe Chris will look it up for us since he's in the room. But there is a guy that does podcasts that's wanted by everyone. And they've been searching for him for years. But he does a regular podcast. But they don't know where he's doing it from.
Interesting to hear the name. I'll check it out. Interesting to hear the name of the podcast or the show. Is he, his face is sewn or is he like covered? Like you hear like
It's just audio. Just audio. Wow. It's not a video. It's just audio. And Interesting. I would have to look it up, but I can't remember his name. But he's wanted by, you know, just about everyone.
I want to ask you, in your line of work, have you noticed from all the years that you've done this, have you noticed that criminals that get more ballsy, I should say, as time goes on, have you noticed that in your line of work? Some do.
And some, I mean, you always have those that no matter what you do, they're going to be repeat violent offenders. They don't get rehabilitated, right? And there's some that they say, you know, I did 5 years. I mean, I've been doing shows with criminals interviewing me, guys who've been rehabilitated, and they said one show I do with Matt Cox. I don't know if you guys know Matt Cox or not. He's getting more and more popular. He did quite a few times. He cooperated. He said, "Man, after doing, I think it was like 14 years," he said, that cured anybody. I mean, I think Mike Doubt said the same thing when he told me. He said 14 years. They both did federal. That's 14 years of your best years of your life gone, right? It doesn't cure you. It doesn't fix you, man. I don't know what to tell you, man. Who the heck wants to live like that? I couldn't imagine. I visited, obviously, do interviews and go in there, and these places smell, right? It's awful conditions. The food, everybody says the same thing. It's atrocious, right? You're lucky if you get Spam burgers, right? They're really feeding you the bottom, what if you get anything, like anything decent at all. And then you have the lights, the checks all night. You can't sleep well. And then you got to be careful. You don't get, you know, messed with somebody, right?
I'm glad you said that because I was going to ask that question. What were some of your biggest challenges and risks that you faced in your job?
Well, it's dangerous work. So with customs, I'll tell you what I got with ATF. So with customs, we're making some of the biggest seizures, right? We're networking a lot. We're at the airport. So we end up making seizures. We give it to the customs guys, or we get gun seizures, ATF guys, certain stuff we do with even Secret Service. I'll meet them a lot because we get a lot of counterfeit currency, counterfeit credit cards. I mean, I always had a huge network, FBI, if anything with terrorism or anything like that. So I had a big network. But with customs, I'm limited to the border, right? I don't need probable cause, right? Is you got border authority. Anybody comes international is subject to search, and we look at, right? That's what we got. We have that authority. But when you're outside the border, I mean, then you have a different game there, right? You got probable cause, right? You got to develop your investigation. You got to take it to a jury, right? Eventually get beyond reasonable doubt. So it shifts. And I wanted to take my cases to a different level. I'm limited to the airport. So I decided, you know what? I want to be an agent. I don't want to just be at customs official. I want to now be a federal agent. So I put in for DEA. I put in for ATF, FBI, and ATF picked me up the fastest. So I went with ATF. The good thing is, at least I stayed in Florida because I was concerned maybe because they don't tell you when they pick you up, say, hey, you're supposed to go anywhere in the country or even Puerto Rico or the islands, right? I could end up in Puerto Rico. I know a friend of mine that ended up in Puerto Rico, southwest border. That's a dump also. I mean, can you imagine going to El Paso or Brownsville or something really dumpy and crappy? I mean, people are miserable in these locations or major city. New York City is all right, but it's expensive, right? And if you're on a federal salary, you don't want to be that. I got Tampa. I got my old stomping ground where I went to school. Very fortunate. I knew the area well. I was still in Florida, and I was happy about that. And I was fortunate enough to also get into a group that did undercover work, right? Because you just can't hop into a UC work. And, of course, eventually, I mean, I didn't look like this. I had a really big beard, had hair all the way to my bottom of my back going on. My English was broken. I spoke Spanglish, the Cuba. And, you know, you play almost like the Tony Montana role, right? You're coming in there because you can't come across like this. Oh, this guy, man, is a smart guy, sharp. No, you can't like that. I'm working for a certain group, and they're looking for guns, and they go back. And don't worry, there won't be any bodies with these guns. These guns won't stay here. They'll disappear and without a trace, right? Wow. That's what they want to hear. So when you're dealing with guys and you get the right informants, which had a lot of informants, it's golden. Informants can make your case or they can break your case, right? Because you got an informant that's out of control, which it can destroy you. But a good informant understands, and that's why I like Breaking Undercover. They made the introductions, and I tried to cut them out so I wouldn't have any issues with informants. I dealt directly with the bad guys, and that's what I did. So it was a good group. One of my guys I worked a lot with, I'll tell you the story, Carlos was his name. We call him the Puerto Rican bullet catcher, right? He was almost killed in an unbelievable shootout. In he was in the 1987 Hialeah, those who know Dade County, and it was at the Hialeah Mall, Westland Mall, and they're arresting a really bad cat, really bad dude, and he's in the front of the vehicle. Here's the vehicle right here. He's in the front, and they have the SWAT team in the back here, right? And when he approaches the vehicle, he has a SIG 9mm. The bad guy has a SIG 9mm, or SIG Sauer, right? He ends up, he has his gun out like this. You can see it. It's out like here. And the guy shoots his round, boom. And he's trying to pull his trigger and can't figure out why his gun's not working. And the bullet had gone right into his muzzle and plugged his barrel, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Look where his gun's at. Look where his gun's at, right? Yeah. Boom. Wow. It's one in a million. Boom, right there. Boom. And he can't figure out what's going on. And the SWAT team sees what's happening, and they open up behind and light this guy up. But wow. One in a million, because if the gun's not there, we call him the bullet catcher. You can only do that once, right?
Only once,
that,
yeah.
That's your birth date right there, Carlos. That was your birth date. Unbelievable. I had a fortunate enough chance to work him for years and stuff like that. After he retired, Ripley's Believe It or Not did a show on that. So if you want to look at it, or just type in, Westland Mall shooting Carlos, and you'll see that in there. You can see more about that, and other people have written about it and talked about it. But he was a guy I worked a lot with, like a mentor. Then I would become my own style. But I learned a lot from him. He's Puerto Rican. His English was broken, right? And I got my own style. And, some guys have to talk a lot. Some guys listen a lot. I was like in the middle, because the jury wants to hear them talk. They don't want to hear you talk, right? They want to know what these people are about. What's your mindset? What are they doing? And what are they saying? And that's what – this is what these guys are actively involved in. This is what they're doing. I never got involved anything to entrap. These were people who were actively involved in either firearms trafficking. The kind of case I did was repeat violent offenders, dealing with international firearms traffickers, domestic firearm traffickers, armed drug dealers, dealing with armed home invaders, murder for hire investigations. The worst of the worst. That's what ATF does a lot of. You know, the ATF is the alcohol. It's a small A, because the days of the untouchables are long behind us. Prohibition, right? Elliot Ness was a legacy ATF agent. Tobacco, some tobacco diversion. Big F for firearms, and a medium E for explosives. But the guns is what we do a lot of cases of, and a lot of people think that ATF, and this may be more a U.S. thing than Canadian thing, Brian, but there's some extremists on both ends that hate law enforcement, right? And ATF may be jackbooted thugs that we're here to take. I can say it now, that ATF agents are very, very conservative. Most people I knew, very pro Second Amendment, and always supporting people's ability to defend themselves, law-abiding citizens. But if you're a bad apple, and you're a repeat violent offender, you're a mass shooter, you're a murderer, there's no reason for you to have any guns. And those are the kind of people we put away for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of curious. Do you think it was worse back then, or do you think it's worse now?
I think it's bad all around. I think it's just consistently bad.
Mean by that is because back in the, obviously, the 70s, 60s and stuff like that, it was like, it was flying everywhere, right? And it's just the law enforcement just wasn't able to catch up to it, because those times were different. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have, cell phones. We didn't have any of that stuff.
Sure.
So now that we do have all those things, and the ATF and DEA and, over here in Canada, it's CSIS and RCMP, and, it's just because we have all those things now, it actually seems like it's worse than it was back in the 70s and early 80s and 60s.
Yeah, you can see more. That's for sure. You know, it's like the news, right? It's like they're covering everything. You're thinking, my God, the world. Maybe in some ways, I'm going to say maybe worse. And I'll say why, because the access, the internet's out there. The bad guys are informed. They know how to do things. I'll give you one example. I mean, at the end of my career, I got promoted, went to ATF headquarters. But before that, I was in an international trafficking group at an MIA working with FDLE, Florida Department of Law Enforcement, out of Miami, right? And I had an interesting seizure involved. And I don't know if you guys know what ghost guns are. Ghost guns are guns that are untraceable, right? They're either made for 3D printers or they're assembled. And you don't have any serial numbers. So very hard to be able to trace them when they're recovered, right? So that's like a big thing. So now bad guys say, you know, I don't need to have a straw someone go in there to a gun show and buy me a gun, right? I don't need to recruit people anymore. Shit, we just have a teams come in there, which they do. The cartels are very good at it, bringing Americans to Mexico and having them assemble weapons or some technology. Hey, this is YouTube paying people. And guess what? They'll be working for the cartels just over the border, right?
Yep.
That's crazy, man. You piss those guys off, you know what's going to happen to you
and your family.
It's like the mafia and compared to the mafia and the cartels. The mafia, they kill for a purpose, right? There's a reason why you mess with business. But with some of these guys, they're kind of like psychopath, bloodthirsty, and they're very famous for going in there like the Septas or whatever and say, oh, look, let's hijack this bus full of people and let's do House of Horrors. We can record it, right? And we'll take it back to the ranch. And we're going to do like, this is all documented cases. You can read about this. They set up like things from like the Coliseum time for 2000 years ago, where they put the, one second you're on a bus going from point A to point B. Now you've been kidnapped and you're put in this horrible ranch and they're giving you guys a club and a hammer. And it said, okay, you two go out and see who survives and we'll start the next round and we'll go all the way down here. And they'll videotape it because they like that shit because they're fucked up that way. And sometimes they do crazy. I mean, you can read all these crazy stories these probably people do. So I never read anything about the cartels really liking doing sadistic stuff like that. But how many these guys start early as psychopaths, as sicarios, and they're bloodthirsty. You know, it's sad and scary. Worse? I don't know, man. It's a lot of violence and scary. And the firepower is out there big time. So these guys stand up to the police. And in Mexico, you know, we don't have an equal partner in the war on drugs. The Mexican authorities, a lot of them are very corrupt, unfortunately. López Obrador is a socialist. I do also some politics here. And his mentality is he doesn't want to be like Calderon, where the country's on fire fighting the cartels. He's pretty much, he says, hugs for thugs type mentality. Leave them alone. They'll leave us alone type mentality. But you can't, that's corrupt. That doesn't work. That's the Americans' problem. They can't, that's Americans and Canadians and the Europeans who they can't stop the drugs going in. They can't handle the people who are addicted to, you know, cocaine or heroin or whatever else. That seems like more their problem. And why do I get involved in that? And that's the kind of partner we have. Where that's the reason why at the end I ended up retiring. You know, I have to work to headquarters. I wanted to maybe work in Mexico. I had briefly worked a little bit other places. But with López Obrador, he didn't want Americans revoked their diplomatic immunity and for the agents. And that's no good. And he didn't want us armed either. So am I going to go in such a violent area, bring my family, be a target, can't be armed, don't have diplomatic immunity, where the government doesn't want us there? No, I don't think so.
I think the big difference between Canada and the States, we have very, very strict laws on firearms. You are not allowed to have a firearm. And even if they're even cracking down on, they're even cracking down on the people that have license. So we don't have the NRA, and I'm sure if we did, things would be a little bit different here. But one thing you rarely hear in this country is school shootings or shootings at all, for that matter. It just doesn't really happen. They're very, very rare. So
you had one in Brunswick recently, right? Last year?
Yeah, that was but he stole a cop car, and that was just a one man thing, and he killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
But again, those are very, very rare. And you never hear about a school shootings in Canada. I think that's the biggest problem with the States is the gun laws. And if they were a lot more stricter, I'm sure you'd have less problems.
Yeah. I would disagree with that a little bit, but
it's hard line.
It is. I blame a lot of people are like I said, you know, we have a big crisis in this country, guys, in mental health issue. Yeah. All these cases are mental health people. These guys are all either they got off their medication, they never were treated properly, and they go off the wagon, and it's a problem because law-abiding people are well know how to shoot, they know how to take care of their weapons. These people here are a problem. And you look case after case after case in school shooting, all these kids, all these guys have mental health problems. And that's why it's important to have good policing. It's good to have people on site protecting, good security, because it's awful to see those images of those teachers dying or the principals dying, giving up their lives for their children, protecting their children, where they have no weapons, they don't protect themselves out there, and that they have to get more fortified. America, I think, is going, and I think it's more fortification where you go to protect yourselves or let law-abiding citizen have their own gun, because a good guy with a gun can always stop a bad guy with a gun, right? Or you try to at least. But yeah, it's a difference here also, Brian, is our Second Amendment rights.
You know
It's our constitutional rights.
And I get that. I get that. And I understand, you know, you're right. And, you know, to bear arms and stuff like that. But again, if you just look back in history, when it comes to Canada and the States, because of our gun laws being so strict, we don't have those issues.
Yeah.
Even if we've been to war, like we fought in wars and, you know, World War One, World War Two, you know, Vietnam, you know, those type of wars. If you look back in history with our strict laws, we don't have those issues. You guys in the States don't have those strict laws, but you do. But if you did, like we did from the beginning of time, things might be completely different in your country.
Yeah, maybe not. I would say, I look at, you know, America's divided. I don't know how much you follow politics. Blue states, red states, right?
Yeah.
Blue states are very, very strict gun laws, right? But they're the ones that are having the mass shootings. They're the ones. And the red states are open because people can protect themselves and they respond quickly and stop these mass shooters because they're armed and protect themselves. You look at California, you know, there's a blue state, Chicago, Illinois is blue, New York City. It's just crime takes over. It's just unfortunate how it's played out in America that the blue states who claim to have the strictest laws, they have the highest crime rates while the red states are different. So I'm very about protecting yourselves, but you know, we have differences, accountability, and these repeat violent offenders, these psychopaths get put away. Those who are a big problem, you put them away and they don't come out.
And again, I come back to the fact that just, you know, and I'm going to repeat myself here, just looking back on history, and you know, people that are bringing the guns into the country, into the States, you know, it's so easy to buy a gun, and these guns are coming into the States knowing that people are going to buy the guns. Our mentality here in Canada, the guns aren't coming in as much because the mentality is that if you're caught with one, you go to jail no matter what, you know? And so it's definitely the mentality. So if the mentality was like ours, would American people be different? You know,
well, when you have a population of 340 million, I think that's hard when you have a population of 25 million, right? Is it 25 in Canada?
I think it's a little more than that, but
yeah, 340 million. It's a different world here.
Yeah, it is. Tough. And I agree. And I agree with that. Yeah. AJ?
I think you can do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I totally agree with you 100% living in the States. I live in Connecticut. I live in a blue state, and we had a Sandy Hook that happened.
Oh yeah. That's awful. That's awful.
Yeah. I mean, and I totally understand what you're saying because, you know, it's a fine line. Like, you know, you want the right people to own the guns, like you said, that have accountability, that know what they're doing with their guns. Like one of my friends, he has everything. He has, you know, his concealed weapon license. He has his, you know, his ATR, his, you know, all different types of guns that he has and stuff. Yeah. But he does everything the way he's supposed to. He has a locked case. He has a safe.
That's what he should do. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, everything he's supposed to do. And, you know, then you got some people that get these ghost guns, like you were saying. And now now what they're doing is, do you see how they got the ghost gun stuff that you could put on a 9mm to make it like a machine gun? I find that crazy.
The Glock triggers there that go faster. Yeah, it's you make that into 3D. It's that's a the scary world we live in. Brian and AJ and that's what we're going to. I'm saying Canada has all the strict, you can put people away, but I know working with ATF, a lot of guns were also getting smuggled in a lot in Canada also. And of course you have a history, especially in Quebec, with the bikers, the Hells Angels. A lot of these guys are well armed, and then you look at the Italian mafia. Yeah, I think the mafia is pretty much done in the United States, but it's still thriving somewhat in Canada. They're still strong because they haven't really knocked them out yet.
Yeah, it used to, like, probably 10-15 years ago. It was like there. I think it was about 10-15 years ago, but it was about, God, I want to say 8 years ago, where it was the first time in 30 years, 40 years that there was a hit.
Yeah.
There was a hit on a person like only steps away from me. And, you know, it was in the next town over where I lived. When I was living in a town called Burlington, which is just right outside of Toronto, it's about 40 minutes outside of Toronto. There was a hit on a guy that in a small town that you wouldn't think there was a hit, but that was like the first hit that had happened. And, you know, obviously it was the first hit that they broadcasted. I'm sure there have been others, but this one was very, very popular because it was in a very small town and he was part of the mob at one point. But yeah, I get it. And you know what? And I agree like with you on several things. But I just think that, you know, because the world when it comes to drugs and tobacco and guns is completely different world compared from Canada and the States. Now, I will say drugs is an issue. Drugs is a big issue. But it's not as much of an issue as it was, like, let's say 7 years ago, because they legalized marijuana here in Canada.
It's legal here in Virginia too.
You know, so it's not as much of a problem as it was, you know.
Have you seen the video? I seen it in Canada right here with the drugs with the legalization in Vancouver, and the people like zombies all over the floor.
They have awful rooms. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Sorry, AJ, I can't hear. You're breaking up.
I said it's crazy because Vancouver has actual clinics where you can go in and get your coke to shoot up in front of.
Yeah, but you're only allowed to carry a certain amount. It can only be under a gram that you're allowed to carry. If you carry any more than a gram, then you are arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so sad to see though for people, you know.
It's scary seeing all those people like zombies all over the floor in Vancouver, watching those videos. And Narcans, and they're trying to revive people and save people's lives. It's like there's a line. I get it. I mean, marijuana, I think a lot of places are going medical, and then Virginia here and other places have gone smaller recreational, right? Yeah. But some of the hard stuff, I think we have to help. I think the key is we have to get people rehabilitated. We have to get them off this stuff because there's no future for that. That's just a horrible lifestyle to live like that. But I was also going to bring about organized crime. You brought Toronto and had some cases. It's amazing how the Bloods, the Crips, MS-13, because there's also a lot of Salvadorians up in Canada, have really taken hold in some of these areas in Vancouver and Toronto too. So I was saying the gangs and the biker groups have been hit hard. But what I've noticed is the cartels and the street gangs are still thriving. They're growing.
There's one that's very, very popular. I can't remember. It's an Asian type of mob. What are they called again?
There's the other. I mean, there's a ton of different Asian groups, and they're expanding too. I mean, you got that prompt too. Yeah.
Go ahead and ask your question, AJ, because I'm going to look it up because the name's going to bother me.
I wanted to ask you. So, as an agent, with the growing of firepower that these criminals have. How difficult is it for you guys as agents to be able to defend yourself? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I know you guys are government. You guys obviously have firepower, but with these criminals coming out with, you know, massive amounts of firepower, how do you guys handle such a thing?
Well, look what happened with the U.S. Marshall Task Force. Those guys that were killed. I want to say it was in North Carolina. I can't remember the city. I think Charlotte, North Carolina, a few weeks ago. And the guy had a high power assault rifle, and he had a warrant for his arrest for weapons violations, history of violence. They came in. I wasn't there at all in the details, but it was a two-story home. He went through the windows. They started picking them apart, right? So, yeah, four people, one marshal and three, two were the state, and one was local in a task force, a fugitive task force with the U.S. Marshal Service were killed. If you haven't seen that, that's horrible. I did a show on that, and that's just awful, awful. But, yeah, it's a risky, dangerous job. Undercover work is dangerous. I was a case agent. And you're going through doors, you don't know, even though you may have the intelligence, you know what's waiting behind you. You have body armor. You try to wear a helmet sometimes. Sometimes you can't. But something, things happen fast, and everybody's well armed, and it gets and get fast and ugly really quick. And life knows that it's not an easy job. It's not for everybody, that's for sure. And then you have you make a split second decision, and then people try to second guess you, right?
Yeah. That's I mean, is there ever any times being undercover where you were like, oh my gosh, my cover might be blown? Did you ever have that moment?
Never had that moment because I dealt with these guys a lot, maybe. But I also had the informants come back later if I needed. Hey, I'm not sure about something. Give this guy a call. See what he tells you. See what if he talks to you or whatever, and just to get some info. You know, it's undercover work. It's not for everybody. I was committed to it. I thought I was good at it. Yeah. My conviction rate was undercover work was pretty much 100%. You know, 99% as a case agent, you're always going to have a funky jury or something that happens in a case. You never know. But I was very proud of my work. I had a good reputation. I did things by the book. I did it the right way. I did guys who were actively involved in stuff. And, you know, I'm proud of the work I did. And then I became a prolific writer with 80 books out there, including ATF Undercover, which is also on Audible. So if you got your big Audible guys or whatever, ATF Undercover is out there. And the most dangerous crime syndicates of our time. That's almost an 8-hour listen. And I break down the history with the mafia, the history with the biker groups, the history with the cartels, the prison gang groups. I mean, there's so many different organized crimes you look at out there. You start shaking your head. It's like, man, I mean, I think that we're a large country, very well populated, a lot of guns, a lot of violence, right? A lot of violence. And it's all over the country. You can't escape it. You can be anywhere. And you go to DC in the Capitol, it's supposed to be a gun-free zone, right? But guess what? The bad guys are armed. It doesn't really work in America because you can have gun-free zones. You know who gets victimized? The honest working person gets victimized while the criminals don't respect the law. Say, oh, gun-free? Well, that means I can victimize and do more things to people. And that's our mindset. In fact, there's so much carjacking in DC, it's frightening for people going to the nation's capital.
Mm-hmm. It was the triads. That was a popular one. Yeah. And it's funny, we were talking about mobs and stuff like that. I remember I met one of the top mafia people in Montreal, because Montreal's big for the mob. And it was years ago. It was back in the early 90s where I met this guy. I actually went to a stag in Montreal for a bunch of players from the football CFL, the Montreal Alouettes. And a good friend of mine's brother played for the Montreal Alouettes before they went under. Then they came back, whatever. But he was having a stag because one of his friends was getting married. Mm. And his father, the father of the groom, was the top guy of the mafia Canada or in Montreal. So I got to meet him, and very, 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 it was interesting. Like when you think about meeting a mob person, you think, okay, well, you know, that it's, you're going to get scared, or you're going to get, you know, whatever, and you're going to be intimidating. This guy was probably about 5'4", 5'5", and very stocky, shaved head like myself. And he had very, very large men behind him very, very large men. But I got to meet him. He was a very, very nice man. And he was head of the mafia. We had a good chat. We sat down, we talked, and he asked me how I knew the groom. And I said, well, I'm here with a friend of mine who invited me. So I didn't really know the groom. I met the groom that night, but very, very, very nice man. Very, very. I was surprised. It surprised me. Obviously, he's a very bad man, but he was very nice, very generous.
You got to be an episode. Al Capone was a very nice guy too, right?
Yeah, and let me tell you, like, believe it. Hey, listen, like, I'd never seen a stag like this in my life.
Oh, really?
And there were like on each table, there was like 25 tables. Each table had a prostitute, like a stripper,
a dancer
dancing on it on each table. And then there were 10 limousines and 20 hookers. And so you had to pay $100 and you'd go out and eat a limousine with these hookers. And it was, and there was drugs flying everywhere. It was, and I'm not into, I don't do drugs. So I'm not really, it wasn't really my thing. So, and I'm not even a drinker of alcohol either. So, but it was very, very interesting. I got to meet the guy from the head of the mob and his son was getting married. And it was like, how the hell did I end up here?
Yes. So you remember that clearly from the 90s. Look at that.
Yeah. It was Brian's wallet was empty by the end of the night. Now I will say, I never went out in the limousine with anyone. I never did anything. What I found interesting, and now I'm getting off track here, but what I found really interesting at the end of the night, and which I didn't know this was something in Montreal when people get married. So the groom and his best man, they got to choose whatever prostitute or dancer that they wanted for the night. And so we're all in a hotel. Sorry, I'm going to tell this story, folks, but I'm going to tell this story. But so we were all staying. We were told like after there was going to be a party afterward in the hotel, which was fine, which was great. So we went back and to the hotel room. There was a bunch of guys standing around and all of a sudden the groom walked in with the best man and two strippers. And he said, put on a show for these guys.
Showtime.
Showtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which they did, which was funny because this guy, the groom, he had his own private jet. And obviously bought by his father. And so he went away with two of the strippers for the weekend and to Miami.
Oh, there you go.
To Miami. And I think you'd
tell me Las Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
No, they were flying down to Miami and he went with the and meanwhile his wife, soon to be wife, is oblivious to everything, right? So it was an interesting weekend, especially we're talking about, you know, mob and stuff like that. And something I didn't know that's becoming very popular in Canada that I just read now is the Pakistani mafia is happening large here in Canada. And, but we can blame that one on Trudeau by opening the gates and allowing everybody walking in that has two arms and two legs and not really doing the due diligence, not really doing the due diligence on these people because we've had a lot of people. Too. Yeah. And you know what? We've had a lot of people come to this country that were very, very bad people. Very, very bad people.
Same here.
And they get caught and then they're deported. And for some odd reason, 2 months later, they're back in Canada.
And, it's awful. You know, but that's in the awful. U.S. too. Yeah, yeah. That's the Biden administration has the same thing: open policy, open borders, and we have the same problems. That's why. And I do politics since you opened a little bit of politics here. I think maybe Pierre can beat him, Trudeau. A lot of people think that could happen. Very conservative movement there, and I think Trump's going to crush Biden, crush him because Stumbling Joe, man, he can't talk anymore. He's just awful.
Now, doing a debate soon. I heard something that they were doing a debate soon. I'm telling you this much. Like Trudeau, the next election, he's not even going to be, his name's even not even going to appear on the ballot because this guy's so hated in this country right now.
I heard him say F Trudeau, wherever he goes, right?
Oh, God. And Trump like hates. Trump doesn't like Trudeau at all.
Let's go Brandon, right?
Let's go Brandon, yeah.
You heard that, right?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, that means F Joe Biden. Yep. That's code. Okay. So instead of sounding like that, but in Canada you say F Trudeau, which is good. They go, let's go Brandon, and that's code right there for that. But I mean, he is just so bad. He's probably the worst U.S. president ever. I mean, at least in my time. He's worse than Carter, I think, now. And that was small when Jimmy Carter was president. He's so bad.
Well, I think it's safe to say that Biden is only the oldest representative, and he's only the face, and he's not really doing anything.
Oh, he's a puppet.
Everybody else is running it or helping him.
He's a puppet. He can't. I mean, and how weird is it that he's obsessed with ice cream like that, right? He's always licking that ice cream. He's going around with ice cream cones like that. He looks like a sick old man, dude.
Well, it's funny because when Trudeau first became prime minister, everybody wanted to take a selfie with him. And everybody, all these girls wanted to take selfies with him. Well, there's nobody wanting to take selfies with him now. And he's absolutely
he's done three terms, right?
What's three that?
Terms? Three terms he's already done?
Yeah.
He wants to go for a fourth? Give me a break. Oh, that's awful. God.
This guy is...
He's going to destroy Canada. He's going to, there's a lot of Canadians who've had it and they came to the United States. You know, the numbers are enormous of Canadians leaving.
Oh my God. Like he just gave $250 million to Ukraine last week. And it's just like, this guy is the worst of the worst. And remember when that plane was shot down several years ago, the Canadian plane in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And it was done by mistake, apparently. Well, to find out all the information or all this findings on what happened, Trump gave to the Iranian people, the Iranian government, who just finished shooting down a plane full of Canadians.
Yikes.
He gave them $7 million to get $2 million back. Like, it makes no sense, this guy, at all. And he just gave $250 million to Ukraine. Like... Yeah. Like, and we got like crap loads of homeless people on the street, and you know, veterans are living on the streets, and they're not getting anything or no help from the government, but yet you're able to get $250 million to the Ukrainians. How about supporting your own people first?
Yeah, for sure. And we say the same thing here.
This guy's given away billions of dollars since he's been in office, billions, but yet we don't have money to support our elderly, our veterans, our homeless.
That's right. That's the same.
And it's just ridiculous how they continually say we don't have the money, but yet just last week you gave away $250 million to a country that we should have been supported first. Now, I'm not trying to be a bigot or racist or anything like that, but at the end of the day, your people should come first. Just like your country. Like, yeah. I know Biden's given away billions of dollars as well, and
he's awful. Just,
it's ridiculous, and you know, but it's unfortunately what you guys say is not going to make a hell of a difference at all.
Yeah, so, but we do influence the people, and people vote, and that's what we talk, and that's why I do the show, because we do have an impact on when voters come around and elections, and what makes sense, people listen, they say, you know, that's common sense, and that's a great thing about democracy. You can vote these officials out, these clowns. Who would say enough of these failed policies? It's time to get someone else out there that do it. And if you can't do the right thing again, then we're going to vote you out too. But I love watching the debates between Trudeau and Pierre. I mean, I mispronounced his last name again. But how do you say Pierre's last name?
Trudeau?
No, Pierre. Pierre's last name.
Pierre.
Pierre, his counter, the conservative leader of the
face. Shit. Yeah,
it's a very French name. I mispronounced it.
Yeah. He's awesome. He's going to be the next prime minister.
He's the next face. He tears him up. I don't realize you guys had a carbon tax. That's awful. You guys have a carbon tax.
It makes no sense whatsoever. It's stealing the money out of the people. And you know what? Unfortunately, in this country right now, like, and I'm sure your country as well, the inflation has just skyrocketed, and food has gone, like, 2 years ago. 3 years ago, you go to a grocery store, I'd buy groceries, and it would cost me $80. For those exact groceries today, it's over 200.
Easy. It's just crazy.
Ridiculous. But, you know, at the end of the day, we can go on with politics. I hate politics. Forever. I don't like politics at all. And I don't like who's running our country. I definitely do not like who's running your country right now.
No, I don't. And, stumbling, bumbling Joe. No.
Yeah. And you're right, Chris. The gas prices has gone up, and to be honest, it's not even worth living in Canada. It's not worth living in the States. And like, I just found out today and I'm saddened by this, that I have a very, very good friend that lives in North Carolina, and she's an amazing person. I've known her for a long time. I just found out today she's living in a tent.
That's awful.
That's terrible.
And she had a fantastic job. She worked for a pharmaceutical company, which is another whole story. But she worked for a pharmaceutical company. I'm finding out this today, and I'm going, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And she had a beautiful home. She had kids and, you know, dog. And at that time when I know her, she was married. But she's living in a tent now. It's like,
how did that happen? Virtual fortune. Yeah, that's just the worst case scenario. Is it drug use, drug problems?
No, I don't think so. I think she left one job, went to another job, and then went to another job, and that job and that company closed, and she had trouble finding another one. And and she's gone through some difficult relationships that have hindered her. But to find out today that she's living in a tent, I'm just going, you got to be fucking kidding me. Like, and it's sad. It really, really is sad. And the homelessness in this country is getting worse and worse.
Places. You go to San Francisco and Oakland, and you look at those pictures out of there. It's awful, awful.
Oh, you talk about Vancouver earlier, and Vancouver's horrible. But I don't know if you know much about Vancouver. If you were to get a one-bedroom, or not even a one-bedroom, a studio apartment, you're looking at almost $3,000 a month.
Yeah, it's expensive.
For a studio.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely, and like, I know downtown New York.
That's like DC.
It's like crazy expensive.
DC's crazy like that too. Yeah, Northern Virginia and DC, it's expensive, crazy. I live in Nova, but farther south here now. You got to be smart. You got to find places. It's not easy, but at least now people can work remotely. And if you can, find areas not as expensive. Get the good jobs and go to the red states where they don't tax you as much, and forget the state income tax. You got to get away from states that are always looking to tax and overregulate you. Of course, I grew up in Florida, and I'm a big DeSantis guy. I like him. I think he did a good job as governor. He kept the state open for business. The pandemic didn't shut things down. People didn't lose their minds. The sky wasn't falling. Get your vaccines. If you're a healthy person, go to work. If you're sick and you have problems, stay home. Yeah, that's common sense. If you're one of those people, stay home. Yeah. But healthy people don't need to stay home. We need to keep on and trucking out. It showed that science was right. You build up your immune system. You get your vaccine if you want to. But a lot of people were healthy, had no issues. And Florida thrived. Texas thrived. New York City, not so good. Chicago, not so good. Blue states, not. California, what a dump. It's a great escape from California. It's unbelievable. That's a beautiful state. I've been there many times. Wow, it is shocking what people are just fed up with LA. LA people are escaping LA.
It's bad in LA, yeah.
So, last question what I wanted to ask you was, and I think this is probably a typical question you've had or have heard in the past, but if somebody's looking to get into this kind of field, what is it they have to do? What do they need to go through? You know, ATF is obviously a very specialized agency, not like a police officer. So if somebody wants to do this, what kind of hoops do they have to go through in order to get where you were?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's important to get your degree, right? The study. You don't have to be a criminal justice major. I wasn't. I was a poli sci history major, but it's good to have an understanding what you're getting yourself involved in. I went into customs, which kind of helped me build into that. Some people like say, well, let me get my feet wet into maybe policing, local policing, state policing first, maybe. Some maybe try different agencies federally and then say, you know what? Now I want to focus on getting DEA. Maybe I want to go to ATF, Secret Service, what have you. The key is you got to be in shape. You got to go through academies. Not easy. You got to really run hard. And I was in Southern Georgia and FLUTC, a federal law enforcement training center. Now I'm not far from Quantico, and that's where the FBI and DEA have their academy. So hot conditions could be tougher conditions, right? You got to shoot well. You got to be someone who's proficient with a gun. They train you, but it helps if you're already familiar with how to use weapons. That's how people fail a lot of the academies. They get nervous. You have to score a certain amount if you can't under a certain time period. You know, targets move quickly. You got to shoot and turns again on you, right? And you got to move and stuff. So there's a lot of factors, and it put the pressure on you in the academy. And then it's really a job, not for everybody, because again, you, like I told AJ earlier, you get second guess and you got a split second to make a tough decision, right? You got to be clear headed, right? You got to understand what you get involved in. And the investigations could be long. I don't miss working the crazy hours I used to work. And that, because that is your life. You have your cases, but then you have informants' lives, right? They're always calling you with stuff, and you have multiple informants. It never stops. And then if you deal with multiple bad guys, you know, it's Sunday afternoon and you just want to watch the game, you can't do that because you got to talk to these guys because they're testing you and say, no way he's a Fed on a Sunday afternoon or Sunday night talking to me for a while. We're talking about bullshitting, but you have to do all that stuff. You got to put the hard yards in, and it could be taxing 12, 14-hour days. It could be brutal, and that's why I kind of put that mentality into book writing and to podcast shows and other things. I'm also doing screenplays also. I'm trying to make ATF Undercover and TV series also, so I'm working with different people on that. So there's a lot of things that opened my door. I never thought I'll be doing these podcasts. I never thought people love my story. I had a producer tell me, man, I love the way you tell stories. I love how he pitched me the first segment of the script there. And he said, I was just watching you the whole time when you're talking about it. And I said, so it opens up to different things. And that came from working undercover where you got to convince these guys. You know, I went to Catholic schools, right? I went to a Catholic school, came from a middle-class family, but I had another education. I learned the street quickly, and I learned these guys. And I beat them at their own game, thinking I was something I was not. So I got a lot of satisfaction out of that, I have to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I mean, you should, because that is amazing. Because it's not easy to be undercover, because they are looking for that. These criminals look for anybody like that. Any suspicion, the littlest slight suspicion, boom, over with.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. So it's
amazing what you were able to do. And one question I have for you is there any other books you are in the process of writing or anything that you're in the process of beginning?
Yeah, I have another Audible coming out on Tyrants and Killers. Shout out with Rick Font. I had two professional voice actors help me out. One for ATF Undercover and the Most Dangerous Crime Syndics of Our Time, both on Audible, and Tyrants and Killers are coming out too. That's almost 8 hour also. It's a series of different tyrants and different famous killings that we've seen, murders, some of the worst mass shootings we have here and stuff. I talk about that, which I found interesting there also. And then I've been also doing writing articles too. And they've been being published here and there. So, and I'm also, I guess, community activist, and I've been involved now. Funny story here real quick. Do you guys know what, you're in Canada and you're in Connecticut, I don't think you'll know this, what a Buc-ee's is?
No.
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is, no.
All right. It's a mega, look this up. I knew about it because I went to Florida and I visited twice. It's a mega gas station where you have 120 gas pumps. You have a convenience store of the size of a Walmart, and you have almost like 1,000 parking spots, right? And they want to put this in a nice area I live in, our backyard, right off the interstate, our exit. And our neighborhood has gone crazy, but unfortunately, Governor Youngkin supports it. So I've been in a little battle here trying with the governor and a board of supervisors, and I've been getting face forward on this. A lot of us in HOA don't want this in our backyard. It will destroy our community. It'll be a huge crime wave increase, pollution. It'll be nasty. It'll be like having a ball game every day off your interstate with 40,000 people. It's a Disney World. They get better numbers than Magic Kingdom. And this will be the most crowded Buc-ee's ever, because we're in Nova. They've never had a Buc-ee's like this. And they're pushing this. So I got that in my hands too. I'm dealing with trying to, because that would destroy our community. So I got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff.
If anybody, sorry, AJ, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm shocked my mother hasn't told me about a Buc-ee's, because my mom lives in Tampa. And so it's amazing she hasn't said anything about that.
The beaver. Yeah. Look at the beaver, man. The awful beaver. That thing. People like the food. They got 100 plus toilets. Well, that's great. I'm glad you have 100 plus toilets. I'm glad you have clean bathrooms. I'm glad you have all that. But not in my backyard. I like going them if you're driving, but I'm not stopping them again because we're having this battle here. And the CEO and founder, he is a multi-billionaire, right? Buc-ee's has gotten to be big. And they're going to be in Canada. They don't think they won't be in Canada. They're going to end up all over the U.S. His ambitions is to push this in every state and go through and have this thing, but not in your backyard, man. That's not where you want this stuff out here. Uh-huh. And he has ties with Governor Youngkin. He's had, I think, contribution of $50,000 to his fund, because Youngkin, as everybody knows, may not know, you know, Virginia politics here, he's like the big name of the Republican Party now. When Trump's done, and now, I think in 2028, Youngkin's running. And a lot of people are pushing him hard too. So it'll be DeSantis, Youngkin, and we'll see who else. It's going to be an interesting race in 2028. I'm going to be a little ahead of there in politics for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people need to, well, the people that don't like Trump, you might as well get prepared because he's your next president.
he's going to be next president. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Better than Stumbling Joe.
My question to you is, because I don't know much about this, but if he's your next president, does he get the full 8 years or does he just get four?
Four and done. Four? Cleveland back 1870 something was the same situation there. He had 4 years, he lost and came back and won.
Yeah, that's what we need in this country. Trudeau should have been gone the last election. Mm-hmm. He shouldn't have been allowed, and he can be there as long as.
Oh, really? No term
as
limits.
As long as he's voted in, he can stay as long. Oh, yeah, it's horrible. Awful. But
you know what changed that in this country, Brian?
What's that?
You know what changed that in this country?
What's
FDR? That? We had Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and he was in too long. He died in office. He died in office before the Second World War ended and Truman took over. So if he wouldn't die in office, God knows how long he would have been president.
Yeah. So is there anything you would like to shout out before we go? Like where people could see you, listen to you?
Sure, watch? Absolutely.
Because I know you talked a little bit about some TV shows you're doing. So why don't you talk a little bit about that before we go?
I appreciate that. Thank you for giving me that. Yeah, you're welcome. I enjoyed you guys' show. Good conversation. I could talk, like I said, politics, law enforcement.
I could go another 2 hours with you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, did anybody told you look a little bit like Joe Rogan?
I get that.
I get it all the time. It's interesting.
I feel like I'm talking to Joe Rogan here.
You know, it's funny. It used to be I used to get what's his name, the MMA fighter, the guy from Montreal. What was his name? The famous one. He's retired now. Anyways, I used to get him a lot. I can't remember his name. I'm not huge in the MMA fighting at all. So
maybe he'd be another Joe Rogan, though. How about that, huh?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind his money.
Yeah, man. Is he exclusively on Spotify now?
He just signed a new contract. I think it was $280 million
for Spotify only, right?
Yeah,
not bad at all. That's pretty good. Not bad for being a comedian and a guy who did what was that name? Fear Factor. I used to watch that show, Fear Factor. I never thought that guy would become,
it's a stupid show. Fear Factor. I didn't like Fear Factor at all.
I watched it because people did stupid things. You're like, I can't believe. And of course, I was a lot younger then, and you know, that's a different time. And I didn't have cable, so at that, it's like free TV. So I'll watch that for free, sure.
Well, for sure. It's just amazing what people would do for money. You know, the stupid things people do for money. It's just it always fascinates me. Some things, you know, there was other shows. I think what was the show that came after Fear Factor? There was another one. It was kind of a dumb one. They would do these obstacle courses outside and stuff like that. It was kind of a follow-up to Fear Factor. But no, Joe Rogan has done extremely well for himself. And you know, the funny thing is nothing special about his shows at all.
Good conversation.
Really, at the end of the day, like, he has some famous people on his show. But other than that, there's really nothing special about his show. I've listened to several of his podcasts, and it's like, why is this guy getting paid $280 million a year? I think it was over 5 years or 3 years he's getting $280 million. But listen, you know, there's a lot of people out there that love him. So anyways, sorry, I cut you off there. Continue saying what you were saying.
Yeah, man. I just noticed that. I just had to put that out there for a second.
It's okay. Thank you, though. It's a compliment. It's a compliment.
Yeah, man. So I've written almost 80 books. They're exclusively on Amazon, digital books. They're short, medium, and long books out there. And if you're a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, all my books are free. So if you're a KU subscriber, go look
Chris
in there.
Chris put it up in the chat here. Chris put one of your books up in the chat. Yeah.
Amazon. Thanks. Yeah, yeah. All my books are free. If you're a KU subscriber, check it out. If you don't like reading or you don't have time, Audible, check me out on Audible. You'll see ATF Undercover, The Most Dangerous Crime Story of Our Time, and Tyrants and Killers. Hopefully, they have it out next month. That's coming out also. Working on screenplays and working on, I do a lot of podcast shows. So if you want to see my shows that I've done, and I do a weekly show too, by the way, too, with William Steele, the reality TV star from Inmate to Roommate on A&E. Him and I have been doing a show for a year and a half. It's a pretty good show. It's popular on Rumble, but it's also on YouTube. You can catch it. The numbers are just a lot better on Rumble because we also talk politics. And if you're conservative and people like it on Rumble, they eat it up because YouTube tends to censor itself. And so it's a good show, popular show too. But I've been in so many different, you know, shows already, 300-400, that you can see a lot of stuff I'm talking about.
It sounds like you're more busier now than you were when you were working.
No, but I enjoy. I really.
Yeah, and guy. I get it. You enjoy it. It sounds like you're having a lot of fun, and that's.
I do in retirement, right? Man. I said I retired from ATF. I didn't retire from life.
Yeah, there that's you go. That's it. And that's the trick. That is the trick. A lot of people, when they retire, they just go, "Okay, what the fuck am I going to do now? Am I just going to sit at home and drink and smoke all day?"
No,
and that's what happens to a lot of people, unfortunately.
Oh man, that's bad news, you know, right there.
It is bad news.
I'm also a very active guy, so. I'm a very physical. I work out a lot. I run a lot. I before, you know what I did before I was getting law enforcement. I was a played collegiately in tennis, had a scholarship, and I also taught tennis and played semi-pro.
Oh wow, cool! That's so very cool.
I wrote a book called Winning Wimbledon when I was in that, and it talks about a. If you guys like tennis or not really?
Oh yeah, I love tennis.
Yeah, yeah. A young American who gets hurt, he gets out of the game, comes back to the game. And becomes, it's fiction, and becomes the first American to win Wimbledon as a qualifier. I think if you like tennis, winning Wimbledon, it's very detailed, but it's good for any sports enthusiast, and it's fun, especially if you like tennis now, what's going on with Rafa, and Federer's gone now, and is he going to retire or not? Now he's talking about maybe not retiring, so we'll see. It's interesting.
Yeah.
It will be the end of a dynasty if, you know, and all three of them.
Yes.
Nadal, in, right? You know, Djokovic and
the Joker himself,
oh,
right?
Oh yeah, it's such an amazing player, and we got a good player here too. But he just came in at the wrong time because all three of those players were doing extremely well, and he every time he would match up with them, he would lose. But he was a very good player here in Canada. But you know what? I would love to have you back on sometime down the road again. You know, because there's so much more that we can talk about. Yeah, I just don't think we didn't really dive, like we talked about it, but we didn't dive into it because I'm a story guy. Mm-hmm. I love hearing stories, especially from somebody that, you know, what you experienced through your life as an ATF agent. I would love to hear more stories because that's who I am. I'm a story guy. And
I definitely have a lot. And if you like that, read my book too. You guys will see a lot of the stories I put in there in ATF Undercover.
Stuff like that. Yeah, and I get the links there, so I'm gonna go get the book.
One quick thing for those who are writers or going to be wired or frustrated by the system. Oh, I think we lost AJ there.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, here he is. He's back.
Oh, he's back. My sister-in-law, she was in the publishing business for 20 years. Right. And she had issues there and moved on. But I said, you know, I'm having some issues getting my stuff published. The gatekeepers are not going forward because they're all about making money, how much they can make about. Right. Yeah. That's what they care about. She said, you might want to look at KU, Kindle Unlimited, because you can self-publish and it goes on Amazon. And so if you're a writer and you have issues and you feel frustrated, look at Kindle. I'm not here promoting anything. I'm not getting paid. I'm just saying what worked for me. I never could get 80 books published like this. And you write what you want, you edit what you want, you do what you want, and you market yourself. But yet, if your thing is to get your work read, it's going to get read. And then you get a lot of reviews. And then maybe you can now redirect it with the publishing companies and maybe you get republished. Just something to think about.
You know, it's interesting. And I'm thinking of this guy right away when you started talking about this. We have a guy on Parapost Network Central. His name is Tanner.
Yeah.
We should hook you up with Tanner because he is a writer. And he is, he has written books that have done extremely well. He's a well-published author and, he actually has some shows on Parapost Network Central about writing. And, we should hook you up with him and he can maybe, you know, you guys can work off each other. And,
For sure.
Because he's actually involved in writing a book right now that he thinks will be done by the summertime. And he told me a little bit about it today. And it sounds really, really interesting, kind of far out there, but Definitely interesting. But we should hook you and Tanner up, and maybe AJ can do that and hook you two up, and maybe you guys can talk. And because he knows everything. Well, I'm not saying he knows everything, but at the end of the day, he's been through the grind. He's been through it, and what you need to do to get your book out there and making massive numbers. And
that'll be nice. Yeah. Too.
So maybe AJ and you can hook you two up. But I want to say thank you. I want to say thank you so much for taking the time out to come and talk with us. And I look forward to having you on again, because there's so many more questions I want to ask you. Yeah. And
we'll do it.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that, you know, sometime around in the summertime. We'll get you back on, and so many more questions. So many more questions. And
absolutely, guys.
And thank you. I'm gonna say my goodbyes, and I'll let AJ do. AJ. AJ can say his goodbyes, but thank you so much for being on our show, and I look forward to having you on again.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to say thank you also for coming on, and I want to say thank you for the work that you've done and what you keep doing. Please keep up great work, because it's very important what you're doing now as well. Just as important as what you were doing before. I think it's even more important now. So just please keep doing what you're doing, and God bless you, my friend, you and your family.
Thank you,
thank you for your service.
You too, guys. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, guys. Be safe, man. Thank Take care of yourselves. All right. Peace.
Bye.
Wow.
Wow, man.
That was an awesome show. Awesome. I had, you know what, over my screen over here, I had 30 questions.
Yeah.
I had 30 questions, and obviously I can't get all 30 questions, but I had so many more questions that I wanted to ask him. But we went way over the time. And, I want to thank everybody that came in the room. Yeah, there weren't a lot of people, but you know what? At the end of the day, we're going to have replays and people watching. And I hope you guys that were watching will share this out for us. And people, we don't say this enough. I want to thank the people that listen on the podcast side. You're just as important as the vodcast side. So thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Our numbers are growing, that I noticed the other day. So we are being downloaded. We are being subscribed to. We are being listened to. And again, for the people that are listening on the podcast, I thank you so much for listening to us and, you know, ramble on. And hopefully we'll get on. I know you're in talks with somebody else.
Yes.
Coming on the show. And hopefully we can have that person come up next week. And I know you got a list now, and I still haven't sent that list. I still haven't looked at that list you sent me. But I will look at that list and get more people on the show, because I enjoy this more. I do enjoy the videos. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy the videos. I enjoy the documentaries, but I enjoy talking to people more that are in the crime area. So,
Well, I'm hoping is going to be very interesting. He's actually on the opposite spectrum of all of this, the criminal side of everything, to have him on. So we're going to be having some cool shows coming up, hopefully.
Yeah, this was honestly a lot of fun today. And I again to Mr. Esteban, thank you so much for being on today's show. And to the people that are listening, thank you again. And other than that, we don't have a closing, do we? I thought we did.
No, we don't actually. But normally I thought you were going to play the Parapost thing, to be honest, because normally we pay.
I don't have that up here.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why I don't have that up here. I got to put that up here.
Yeah.
But I always wondered that. Do we have it? I thought we did have a closing.
No, I don't think we did.
Because I could just put on thank you for joining us from Through the Lens.
There you go.
Nah, I won't do that. But again, thanks, buddy. Nice to have you back.
Yes.
Hopefully we'll see you guys. Hopefully we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
And thank you. Thank you. Thank you for showing up.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
No problem.
Yeah. Okay. Good night, everyone. Bye.